are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hello, how are you, Aaron?
I'm doing well. You know what? I'm doing very well.
Very well?
Yes, friend of the show, Terrence Johnson, and I just saw Destroy All Monsters, one of the Godzilla films, in a packed theater.
Nice.
For this Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
Super fun way to watch what I call the Avengers of Godzilla movies, because it combines a whole bunch of monsters into one big movie.
Yeah.
So nothing happened
in your screening? Like no ceilings fell down like the fun of the Destination Bloodline screening?
No, we were just raising the roof of excitement. That's
raising
what's going on.
The roof.
Yeah. We rebuilt the roof in our theater. That's what happened.
Oh, wow.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. It's been a marathon day. I've been a lot of traveling.
Yeah. Like by foot?
No, by vehicle, but just going across the bay from one point to another for some Memorial Day barbecues.
Oh, busy bit. Popular guy over here.
Popular.
Memorial Day barbecues. No. We got to get that moolah at our barbecue. That's what they're saying. Out Now is a film podcast, obviously. We're aiming to discuss new movies weekly. However, every now and then they have these special bonus episodes where they're sort of our fun commentary tracks or something a little different. But this is something fairly straightforward. It is just a review episode for Lilo and Stitch.
Hello, hoy.
We, of course, talked about Disney's Snow White back in March, and there was a certain kind of promise made by the guest on that episode to reconvene later on so we could talk about the other Disney remake coming out this year. And that's exactly what we're doing. Abe is now here this time around. He was unable to join us for that Snow White review, a movie that definitely matters and made a lot of dents in the world.
I'm here to cast judgment on our, making sure that we fulfill our agreements and obligations with our guests.
Exactly. But joining Abe and myself once again to talk Lilo and Stitch, we have from Ember Productions. He ain't nothing but a hound dog. It's Maxwell Hatted.
Woof, woof. What's up?
Also joining us, also from Ember Productions. They're usually up for a little less conversation, but they're happy to talk with us today. It's Amber Coates.
Oh, I am of the most suspicious of minds, let me tell you.
Right. Thank you for picking up. I'm going to put him down. Glad to have you both here. Glad to have you back on with us.
Always
yeah,
a pleasure.
It's good to be here. Yes, absolutely. I'm ready to talk about this movie.
Well, good. But right before we do that, because I do want to, we should get plow into things. How are you guys' summers going so far? At least the summer movie season going so far. We're a few weeks in.
It has been unseasonably cold here. It should be in the 70s and 80s. It's been like 45 and raining all week.
Gross.
Summer movie season is off to an interesting start. Some good ones. Some not so good ones. Some I hope to never see again.
Fair enough. Amber, any additional thoughts?
I got out of the cold area where he happens to be, and I'm in very, very warm, very sunny, and today very rainy Orlando, Florida. But I do agree, it has been a very interesting, quote, summer movie season. Some of the movies have been really great. Some of them I've been like, I don't know if I ever want to see that again.
Right. Told my line, son of a bitch.
She's also on the way to go to Stanford to go visit.
Exactly right.
In a really beat up Chevy, so she might not get very far though.
Yeah, let's be real. Will probably broke down like 50 miles into that.
Yeah, he didn't. Like, he didn't make it all the way.
He called up Affleck right away. He's like, Chucky, sorry, it's a little off the beaten path here, but I'm gonna need a lift.
Then again, if you take Too Fast, Too Furious to heart, do not take for granted the car capabilities of one Mr. Cole Hauser. He might have put a hell of an engine in that crappy car.
Yeah.
Also true.
Yeah. It's a good engine.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well.
Well, you don't want to go with more Good Will Hunting?
Listen, I got all night. All right. It's Memorial Day weekend over here. We can do a line by line. Aaron. We got four of us. That's a good enough crowd. Let's get that script out.
Aaron.
We all have that at goodwillscript.com. We can get the script going. And
Aaron, you like apples?
What?
I said, do you like apples?
Why?
That's not what he says.
What does he say? What's the last thing he says?
He says, sure.
Sure, yeah, sure.
Well, I got a number. How do you like them apples? All right, let's keep going.
Right.
Well, maybe we could go out for some caramels, which is arbitrary as a cup of coffee.
He's going to go use his poor sailor.
A cup of coffee.
What did he say? Like,
let's get the kiss out of the way right now. Okay.
When he was talking to Robin Williams about his foster father or whatever beating him up, what did he say? He's like, he used to be either what, the belt or
a wrench or. I think like a stick or something like that.
It was like a stick belt, but he said, and he's right. It's like,
what, but it's you, always it, like the wrench.
And, but she's like, so you chose like the belt, right? He's like, no, the wrench. He's like, why? Cause fuck him. That's yeah. why. I love that line so much.
Yeah.
We just put
I like, I like hard Damon. I like that Damon a lot. Hard and secure Damon. What are we doing? Oh, yeah. Let's get to our main review for Lilo and Stitch.
We have apprehended a dangerous experiment. Where is he?
He escaped.
He is trying to find the police cruisers.
He took the red one.
What hideous planet is caught in your crosshairs?
A shooting star!
I wish for a friend. Like a best friend.
What the hell?
He's so cute and fluffy.
He is your responsibility. Got it.
We promise.
Yeah.
Okay, that should have been some of the trailer for Lilo and Stitch. It was originally announced in 2018 that Disney was developing a live-action remake of the 2002 animated film Lilo and Stitch. Production took time, but eventually a script was developed, and Marcel the Shell with Shoes On director Dean Fleischer-Kemp was brought on to helm what was said to be a direct-to-Disney Plus feature. Based on reactions to initial footage, the film became a theatrically intended production, which led to the eventual opening and wide release, and it made serious ducats of money in the process. Just so far. The story remains the same. Two orphan sisters in Hawaii are doing what they can to get by, only to find themselves caring for and dealing with an escaped experimental alien who has others on his tail trying to take him back. Various forms of destruction and adorable bonding ensue. Maxwell, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on the original animated film, and what do you think of this update remake?
So this film made me sad for two reasons. The first being I'm a huge, huge fan of the original. It is comfortably placed in my top 50 favorite movies of all time, wow. At least as that rests today. Fantastic. We have hung framed Stitch art in our apartment.
Does that mean drawings of Stitch or drawings by Stitch?
Both.
They look like Jackson Pollocks.
They're really spectacular. I had to go to Sotheby's. It's a whole.
You had to go to Sotheby's.
Yeah.
They were for auction.
They were, yeah. Listen, so the other reason this makes me sad is I really like Dean Fleischer-Kemp and was a huge fan of Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, and like intellectually, he's a perfect choice for this material. So, although I wasn't like outrageously excited, I was giving it the benefit of the doubt, and I'm sorry to say I shouldn't have. That I basically hated it. It felt cheap, like a made-for-Disney Plus movie, not in a good way. I found it lacking charm and heart. I had a hard time buying into the emotions they were trying to sell. The comic relief had my eyes rolling so far out of my head that at one point I have to run down the aisle to pick my eyes back up and reattach them.
Minority Report style.
And this CGI looked terrible. So, good stuff. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Okay, so mixed response from Maxwell.
Just really positive, yeah.
All right, let me shoot over to Amber. Same question. What are your thoughts on the original 2002 film? What did you think of this remake?
So, I feel a lot the same about the original. Like, I love the original. It's a comfort movie for me. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to move to Florida and work at Disney. But this one, I actually really enjoyed it. I think I turned to him at some point in the middle of the movie and said, "You don't like this, do you?" And I was like, I could just tell. But I wanted to suspend my like disbelief, or I kind of wanted to give it a chance because it handled some subject matter that I'm very fond of. So I really did. And I see the point about the CGI. Some of the CGI is a little iffy at points. And it could be a little bit murky, but I didn't really have much of a problem. I think that there were certain things that annoyed me about it, but there was a whole heart to the story that I still felt and I still really got into.
I will note that compared to other live action Disney remakes, this film cost $100 million, where like Snow White, for example, inexplicably cost $200 million. And that does come down to, again, the fact that this movie was originally intended for Disney Plus before it got. So the budget is significantly lower in that regard. And that's also why you don't get like a giant space sci-fi adventure thing at the end like you do in the animated film, because there's just less money to go around. But with all that said, Abe, where are you with both the original and this remake?
Yeah, the original kind of came out in 2002, so I was already a junior in high school. So it was a little bit past like where I was really involved with, I guess, like animated Disney stuff. So it kind of missed my boat. It's almost like the way that Pokemon missed my boat, where I just never really got into it. But I have seen it since, and I like it. I don't know if I love it, but beyond that, this movie here, it's very strange because I'm kind of like two minds of it. One of it is, well, it's fine. Like, it's a family movie, and it's totally fine. And then the other brain of it is kind of in line with Maxwell, where it's, like, critically thinking about this, it feels like a Xerox, but a not very good copy of a Xerox. And so, I found it hard to attach to some of the themes or some of the things that they were trying to get at, because it just felt as though this is, term is going to seem kind of harsh, but it feels like a little bit ingenuine or ungenuine, like the way that they're either saying the lines or the way that they're trying to portray some of the emotions and feelings on the screen. So it's kind of unfortunate, because I think that there's a lot going on with this storyline, and it does differ from the original animated film. But like, for all the things that they're doing, I guess, well and good with the basic concepts of, you know, family and sticking together and everything else, like, it also kind of just goes out of its way to also undermine that completely also at the same time. So it was kind of I know that there were a lot of children in my screening, and that's well and good, and they enjoyed it. But yeah, critically, it's like, I don't know. It feels like it was, Aaron, when you said that it was going to go to Disney Plus, I was like, I guess that makes sense. Like, it certainly felt that way. So, yeah, it wasn't really my cup of tea.
So the 2002 film, I did not see till much later, as in well into my 30s. Mm-hmm. And I somewhat regret that, because I really like it. I like that movie quite a bit. There's a bit early on where, like, another girl is teasing Lilo, and Lilo punches her in the face. And I'm like, this is the greatest animated Disney movie I've ever seen.
it's a great gift to use.
It's such a, like, there's weird wish fulfillment going on. It's like, what if a kid did do this? But obviously that's not the reason only reason I like that movie. But, like, I do think it's very successful in what it's aiming for. I think it has a reference to it that I appreciated quite a bit. It looks good. All these other things that I'm sure people have talked about in the past when talking about Lilo and Stitch 2002. Mm-hmm. So the prospect of doing a new one, I was already on my, you know, I was already, I say worried. I was certainly like, why? Because it's like 2002, that's not a long time away from this original one. Don't even get us started back on the Moana thing again. But like 2002, it's like, what are we going to do new with this? Like, at least with, as much as I don't care for Lion King, there's innovation there as far as, if we're going to have a test case for CG effects, use it on something that's going to obviously make a shit ton of money, which it did. This, it's like, I don't know what you're going to do with this that's, like, particularly innovative. We've seen live action and CG creations be united on screen since the Phantom Menace at this point. Like, that's not a new thing. So it's like, what do you get out of this beyond just the money? And by all means, they were successful in getting the money so far. But in terms of, like, an artistic attempt to do something, like, I can agree that it doesn't accomplish a lot in that regard. However, I still enjoyed the movie well enough. I'm more on Amber's side in this, as far as I think what it's going for, it does mostly succeed at. Does it look like a lesser budgeted Disney film? I suppose, but like, it didn't bother me that much, mainly because the Stitch worked for me, which is the key thing involved there. And the main thing I wanted to see this movie get right was the sisters. And I think it does. I think they're well cast. I think they have chemistry. I like their interactions with each other as well as Stitch and even other cast members. Are there changes that feel either odd or just out of place compared to what the original did with more efficiency, since it's a 90-minute movie as opposed to a 140-something-minute movie? Yes, because all of these Disney remakes suffer the same problem. Let's pad it out for some reason. And it's like, all right. But this one, I have it around like the middle of the pack as far as Disney remakes go, and that's at least above average to a degree. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's great, but I did feel for the things they were going for in the way that they're, I guess, intended. Is there a better version of this movie? I guess. I don't see the animated one.
Yeah, the animated one.
I mean, like, is there a better version of this?
Is there
a better way to remake this movie? I don't know, perhaps.
Right.
As far as what was delivered to me, the things that I wanted to see out of it, a Stitch that still worked in this form, the sisters, like I mentioned, that was good enough. Like, is it like me giving it a pass? Not necessarily. If I didn't like it, I wouldn't have liked it. I liked it. But it's lesser than, but it still does enough for me to work overall. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at with this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I could agree with you that as far as like the Disney remakes go and the Disney live action remakes go, it wasn't terrible. I never even thought about the CGI. I thought it was okay, except for some parts where the sister trying to like pat the back of Stitch's head and then they quickly cut. Yeah. And they do that like a couple times. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I guess, you know, it's not really there. But
I thought the whole opening that's all CGs, all aliens and stuff, I thought that looked fine. It didn't bother me. Like, it looked fine. Like,
yeah. And I was looking out for the robot that throws up, you know, machine parts, and they had it. So it was good.
I was really happy when I saw that, honestly. I was like, yeah, throw up. That's right.
Yeah. But he calls attention to himself in this version of it. I was like, I don't know. You know, he didn't say that he was going to throw up in the original cartoon one, though.
But. Maxwell, let me ask you, when did this movie start to lose you?
Pretty early on. Mm-hmm. I feel like it. I'm trying not to be like, I hate disliking things and I hate being negative. So I always try to choose my words more carefully. But I think it was clear to me from early on that I was not vibing with the tone. It just felt really, for lack of a better word, pedestrian to me. Whereas, not to inherently compare it to the animated film, but the animated film always felt so like offbeat and luscious and gorgeous. And this just felt like the most, let's choose to just placate the most number of people possible without actually putting any sort of vision into it. And then once the jokes started, I found the humor to be really like just eye-rollingly cheesy and not funny to me.
I can say right now that the things being done by Zach Galifianakis and Billy Magnuson are awful in my eyes. Like, none of that works whatsoever.
I hated them so much, and I like both of them in other things. It's not about them. It's just whatever the heck they're doing in this movie just made me angry, frankly.
When I mentioned that there were things that annoyed me, it was specifically Jumba and Bleakley. Specifically. Like, I was like, why did we need to do this? Like, But the rest, like, I bought everything else. Except for, like, I think one head scratch on Stitch that Nani did, like, where she scratched past his head. I'm like, girl, that's not, you saw it.
Yeah, I saw it too, yeah. Definitely one of the ones that I clocked. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think the other thing that kind of didn't work for me too, kind of inserting myself into Aaron's question here, is there's an element of Child Protective Services that comes in, and that's also in the animated one too. But there's like for everything that the sister is trying to do and trying to get right, like it's quickly just washed away. Like there's just like. I don't know if it's like a thoughtfulness of you know, yeah, you should go pursue your higher education, but also your sister becomes like a ward of the state, and I know that it goes to like your neighbor, but it's still a pretty serious message to think about. I'm with you on that.
It definitely is a head scratching decision.
Yeah. So it was kind of hard to you know, I guess. Think about the term Ohana and then just be like, I guess the entire island is your ohana, but they didn't really go to any length to really establish that beyond.
I don't think they try to do like a Hawaii is the like a. I don't know.
No, I don't think they're really doing that either. Well, but, you know.
Because I mean, it was very reminiscent of kind of the first movie, but in the first movie, you had more alien involvement, so that the aliens and Nani and David became Lilo's family because now she had basically a mother and technically a father figure in her boyfriend. But I mean, it kind of still ended up that way. She just went to be with the boyfriend and the boyfriend's mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of saw it as they have like an extended family across the street kind of thing. And I actually know people who have done this and they don't become wards of the state. They actually just go to live with other people in their stead. So they become, so like Nani was technically her guardian, but because she was young enough to go to college and she found somebody to be like the protective guardian, that's like something that can be done.
Right.
So I bought it because it was actually something I've seen done before. And I actually had a lot of respect for how delicately they handled it because in the animated movie, they leave it very, very vague and very open. And a lot of people have a problem with it, but that's because they don't know a situation like that.
Yeah.
And like, I've seen a lot of discourse about it where people are being very rude, of course. So I just try to stay out of it. I'm like, stop.
I think the above all else, I think we're all being very civil about this, but the online discourse has been quite toxic about all the stuff that we're talking about here, like to degrees where I think Maxwell, even I, who don't like it as much as both of you, would be like, I don't know, you guys are going really hard on this.
People have been nasty. I mean, it's no surprise. I, you know, disliking something is one thing. The way you talk about it is what makes the difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been, I guess, enjoying my weekend too much to be online to notice this. So I've heard reference to this, and I'm like, I don't know what even refer. I just heard hear the internet's talking. It's like. Yeah. You're saying what now?
It's specifically about the point we've been discussing. And, you know, I appreciate Amber bringing a nuanced take to it.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to add about this point. I think it's interesting and also for me has my head going all sorts of ways that the actress who plays the state services social worker, Tia Carrere, voices Nani in the original.
Yes.
So while it's a nice homage to have her, my mind was having this weird disconnect. Like, you're trying to convince Nani to give her sister to the state, but you are also Nani.
But you were Nani?
You were Nani. You should want to keep her.
In regards to all of this, from my just the perspective I have since we're voicing it, it does feel like it exists in a Disney world where the idea of giving someone over to social services or whatnot is like this very peaceful process. Nothing ever goes wrong or whatnot. And it's like, yeah, the optimism there seems a little far fetched, but I get that this is a fantasy of sorts, I suppose. So like, but you know, obviously I can't speak more to the situation compared to others that actually have, you know, real life experience or what have you. As far as how the movie handles it, I guess Abe, to your point, like the only issue I really have is, by the time we get to a resolution, it feels like a scenario where all that really needed to happen was her to speak up even sooner, where it's like, I mean,
the neighbor.
Yeah. It's like, if this is always going to be that way, like, she could have said something like 2 days ago, like, I mean, a year ago.
I had that exact thought. I was like, you caused all this drama for nothing, lady.
Yeah.
Well, and like the animated movie is very clear. Nani is very, very strong-headed and temperamental, and she will not let anybody into her situation to see what's going on. In this movie, this next-door neighbor lady who has been with her the entire time knows the situation and understands what's going on. So, I understand that they wanted to tell the story from the same kind of benchmark where we were before. But come on, guys. Like,
you do
a disservice to your own telling of the story by not including that.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I think that's like the largest part. But sorry to cut you off.
No. Also, for another person who voiced a character in the original and was in this one, The guy who voiced David is actually the luau manager.
Yeah,
in
Jason
this
Scott
one.
Lee, who Scott Lee. Pops up and he still looks very attractive as Jason Scott Lee.
Yeah,
since, like, since being like Mowgli in Jungle Book,
and
like
being, dragon.
Of course,
being Bruce Lee.
Like,
you know, he's almost 60 and is like, this guy is doing the job for himself.
Yellow don't mellow, Aaron.
Yellow don't mellow.
Yeah,
that's it.
I can say that.
But the sight of him is so striking that I'm like, is there more of him? Because it seems weird to like have Jason Scott Lee enter this movie for like 1 second just to like scowl at Nani from a distance, and I'm like, that's the cameo he gets.
Just to hit on Amber's point real quick too, is that I think that's the part that kind of perplexes me the most about the situation, is that unless before Tia Carrere is like, we have a different situation set up, like Nani is willing to just be like, do it, and I'll just be off on my own. That's the part that kind of like rubs me the wrong way. It's not in a negative way, more just like from a storytelling. It's like, you didn't really set up this neighbor thing like what Amber was talking about.
I think that there's ways to do it. It just feels like they took shortcuts to get there as opposed to a stop. Because, like, clearly she's on her side, like, the whole time. Totally. And she's helping out what she can already.
Right. Yeah.
I'll note, the actress is Amy Hill. She's been in plenty of things. I think as a performance goes, she's good with what she's given. It's not a lot, but she makes a lot
of
it.
I will say she is one of the things I did enjoy. I always liked her. I thought she did a good job with what she was given. She made me smile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will.
Her riding that ATV was really
so
amusing.
Funny.
I actually was like, is that her? Or did they like CGI somebody else in there? But she's also Jason Scott Lee. He's like the dad in the Disney Plus Doogie Howser remake.
Yes, he is.
And Amy Hill also shows up as a cameo in that show too. So, you know, again, Hawaii, Jason Scott Lee. Fantastic. Tia Carrere has roots in Hawaii too, so it's really cool that they've got all this stuff going for all these minor characters in this live action remake.
I will just be on the social worker stuff for a second longer.
Okay.
It does, by having Tia Carrere's character in here, it does make Cobra Bubbles, played by Courtney B. Vance here, feel like really redundant, because it's like, if there already is a social worker, why is what's this disguise he's supposed to, like, what's his purpose here in the movie?
Yeah.
As much as I'm happy to see Courtney B. Vance pop up in something, the fact that the movie both doesn't do much with makes no sense about that as far as why he's here, but also, again, has the name Cobra Bubbles and never makes one joke about that. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, what are we?
Yeah, I thought that character was really mishandled in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. But I will say, really good weekend for the Vance Bassett household.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
As well and as Hannah Waddingham.
Yes, exactly right.
And Hannah Waddingham also.
Everybody's making money this weekend.
I thought about this while you guys were making a point earlier. You know, I grew up with all like the Disney Channel original movies that had like the worst plots ever and like all these plot holes.
Yeah.
And it was around the same time when Lilo and Stitch came out. It was when I graduated from high school. So, I mean, I was still in my Disney era that I never left until like even now. Mm-hmm. So I sat through all that. I can sit through this.
Yeah, there's a lot of plug and play in those movies, right? Yeah. Oh, we got a roller skate so we can save this. Oh, yeah, we got to go to a surf contest so we can save that. Oh, yeah, we have to
help
our superhero parents by doing this to save that. It's a lot of the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so here's an intellectual debate question, right? Please. So, like, I personally, when it comes to movies, judge or critique based on what I think the movie's goals are. And that can be, in some cases, impacted by external forces. Like, for example, as you were just talking about, I still watch and enjoy a lot of those Disney Channel original movies from the 90s and early 2000s because I know what they are, I know where they aired, and I know what they're setting out to accomplish. But here, where you have a big budget, heavily marketed, big screen release Disney movie, I would think that you expect it to be setting out to achieve something different, and then to find out, oh no, this basically is a mediocre made for TV movie. Does that impact the way you guys view things? And is that a legitimate critique, or does one have to ignore all of that?
I do think it comes down just to our separate reactions to begin with, where I like this movie more than you, because I just disagree with some of the things you're saying about it. I do think it's more, I think it's more effective than you feel it is. I think it doesn't, I don't think it looks particularly ugly. I would say, yes, it certainly looks of its budget, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. So like, if I'm measuring it against something, it's both, yes, a certain kind of what is it aiming to do versus how much it's accomplished, as well as how does this match against the other attempts of Disney to remake their own movies in live action form?
Sure.
And from the list I have, looking at all these movies, like, I like this more than this, that, that, and that, and that. Also, as far as the things I've already praised it for, as far as what I think it gets right, as far as like certain casting choices or what have you. So it's like, I get what you're saying, and I don't disagree as far as how to measure these things. Just a matter of, I frankly just like this more than you do.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Yeah, I think just straight up, it would Maxwell Impact if it was framed in the way of like, well, this is going to be a straight to TV movie. Then I'd probably, you know, mentally would be like, all right, I'm expecting this, this, and this, and you know, the stakes are a little bit less, so to speak.
Yeah,
but it's almost the same way that I think about like when Aaron and I talk about like Netflix releases, right? It's like, okay, well, I'm expecting a certain level of Netflix feeling to it, which is to say, like, you know, it's kind of light in story, but it might have like some budget and might have some big names, but it might be entertaining and it might not be entertaining. Like, it's kind of like a flip of a coin sometimes for me for some of the Netflix stuff. So if it had been that this Lilo and Stitch live action remake was just going to be straight to Disney Plus, like, I probably would have been like, this is actually a really solid Lilo and Stitch live action remake that just went straight to Disney Plus.
Yeah. Interesting. Thank you.
Do you want me to answer too?
Sure. Please.
He knows how I feel about everything. I go into it. I go into all of these movies with an open mind because I want to feel from something like this. I want to feel the nostalgia of what I felt the first time I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
If I love this movie, and I do, I love the animated Lilo and Stitch. I want to love the live action. I didn't, but I didn't hate it either. I was pretty warm on it. Like, but it wasn't like I would go out and immediately watch it again. I would watch the animated movie again because it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, like, I go into things, I look for a specific level of enjoyment. I want to feel something on my way out. And then I will go into, was that believable? And if it wasn't, why wasn't it believable? Was this something that impacted me? Did this excite me? Did this make me feel a certain way? And how was the production value on it? And did the production value lack in that? And then I start critiquing it from there, and I will take chunks out of it as we go. Mm-hmm. So I can watch schlock. I'm sure.
I will say to the you want to feel things thing, you were crying through more than a few minutes of the movie.
I sure was.
There's a part where they've got to, you know, revive a character, and I could hear a lot of kids like sounding worried. So I think Disney did their job there. For the core audience that they're going for.
I wouldn't be surprised by that, but even saying that somebody, say if I'm crying at something in a movie, depending on the scenario it's in, I don't necessarily make the movie doesn't like blow up in its, in my regard for it because of that, depending on like what it's trying to do. If it's something that's just like, you know, is just sad and just is naturally going to make you sad, then yeah, maybe your reaction is to cry. That doesn't necessarily make me think it effectively did something to me. It just hit me on a visceral level to be like, yeah, my reaction as opposed to laughter is being sad now. Like that, you know, that doesn't score many points with me. If something can make me cry because of like the emotions it elicits based on just a character achieving something, that's when I know something's effective on me because I care about what that result was going to be.
Right, right.
And I'm so happy that that's leading me to tears. Like, that's a different story. If you're telling me Amber cried because sad things happened in certain parts of the movie, it's like, I don't necessarily know if that makes me think she thought the movie was amazing because of that also.
No, I wasn't saying that.
I didn't think you were.
It made her feel in one way or another.
Like, I think I cried when the Hawaiian Children's Choir hit because that's such a nostalgia bomb for me because I delivered pizza listening to that soundtrack. I know almost every word in Hawaiian of the songs. I love them. So it hit me and I was like, Yes, this is what I wanted. Oh my gosh, yes. When she fed Pudge the sandwich, I was like, ah, she's feeding him the sandwich.
How did that sandwich stay together under the ocean?
She used really sticky peanut butter.
Yeah. And the bread is like just made from the sea. A couple of notes on the luau, or I guess the dance sequence. Hair needed to be more red. And maybe more prominent glasses.
Yes, needed to be way more Myrtle. She justified the punch or the punching and the pushing.
Yeah,
Uive, that girl.
There is like real punching in the cartoon one, right?
She punches her. It's cool.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just like a shove.
Yeah, she punches her. I was so surprised being an adult watching this movie the first time. I was like, that's a choice. let me ask you guys this, because I seem to be the only one that said it so far. Did you guys like the casting of the sisters? Do you think they worked for you in the film?
So I think if I had to pick a favorite thing about the movie, it would be Maya Kealoha. I think she's really good, believable, naturally funny. Like, she's a find, and I hope this starts a career for her. The other sister, Sydney Agadong, she was okay. There were some acting choices she makes towards the climax of the movie that elicited some unfortunate giggles from my part. but she was okay. But Maya, I loved. I thought she was best case scenario for live action for this role.
Yeah, I honestly bought right into their relationship. I thought they were cute. And I'm usually not great on like, we did a shot for shot, but like all of the establishing parts of them in their first fight when she's locked her out and she's playing Elvis, I was like, oh, you guys really went for the shot for shot here. And it was almost perfect. I was like, it hit every beat and it drew me into their relationship. I was like, there were little parts where I was like, okay, it's not as close as the animated version, but I still bought it. I was there and I liked them a lot.
It's the kind of thing we're saying that I've only seen this movie when I was in my 30s means I also haven't seen it that many times. So the fact that I was able to recognize a lot of sequences specifically around their interactions, I appreciate it because source fidelity is not like the answer to making these good, but in terms of how do you reestablish this kind of thing that you've already seen? Those are, I think, the early stages of that make a lot of sense to do it the most closely. So, like, when you have them both slamming their doors in separate shots and stuff like that, I'm like, I remember this very well, and this makes sense, and I like how this is playing out. Like, that's stuff that I did appreciate for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, the little sisterly moments where they're laying in bed looking at pictures and they're just being together, especially, like, I think this is when Stitch crashes. And she kicks her out of her room and she's pushing her and she pretends that like gravity's taking her. So she starts collapsing on Lilo. Like all of those things hit that nostalgia button. It just started mashing it so hard for me. And I was like, it's them. I feel them. And and Maya she killed from there. Like I was like, okay, this kid, I love her. And then I remember the moment when Swell was bought a little bit by the movie was the moment Lilo and Stitch met because I heard him gasp and giggle. And I was like,
I just think Maya's like screech yell is really adorable, honestly. She does it a couple times in the movie and I'm like, okay, that's a good one.
And I was like, is it danger or is it happiness? It's generally happiness.
Yeah.
So she's probably causing danger, so danger and happiness.
That's true, yeah.
So let's speak to that a bit. The Stitch aspect of it all. Did you, for all of you, obviously, but because Maxwell, you're lesser on the film, while Amber, you're more, and Abe, you're kind of in the middle. Like, it's pretty much where I am. But what did you think of the handling of Stitch antics in this movie?
I thought it was okay. Like, again, I think I had more of a problem with like how quickly the sister got over it, and I was like, it's a weird thing to get visited by the state, then try to get a job, lose your job, then tell your sister that the house is clean. Please don't do anything. Stitch runs amok. And then she's just like, I'm going to go to my room. And it's like, all right, I guess the next day I'll forget all about it. So it was kind of like a weird thing for the antics stuff. In terms of the antics themselves, you know, classic Stitch, just, you know, messing things up and being a ham as he's learning, ways to express himself. But, yeah, I think on the consequence level, it's like, this doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me.
I mean, I kind of... Oh, no, go.
No, you please.
I thought it was kind of funny because I've been that overwhelmed in trying to take care of people. Mm-hmm. And I just finally give up. I'm like, you know what? You do whatever you're going to do. And I'm never going to be able to fix this. Goodbye. Just go away. So I was like, I vibed with that. I was like, oh, that's relatable.
Yeah.
I thought Stitch and his antics were fine. You know, it either to me was like exactly what Chaos he got into in the original, but less well done. Or like, for example, when he first lands in the wedding stuff, like I didn't care for that much. It felt too broad almost. I don't know. And I don't know if I'm the only one that noticed this, but the voice sounded a little off to me. And I know it's the same guy who did it, and maybe it's because he's gotten older, but there was like a more high pitched tone underneath it that just threw me off a little bit. I don't know.
I didn't really notice it.
Voiced by director Chris Sanders, who was both making the Wild Robot and recording lines of Stitch dialogue at the same time.
Yeah, take that, Timothée Chalamet.
To be clear, the Wild Robot is fantastic, so I have no issue with Chris Sanders.
Yeah.
It's like all those stories about Chalamet learning how to play and sing Bob Dylan while working on Dune.
Entirely comparable, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris Sanders is a pro too.
I thought the Stitch stuff was fine. Something I did like in like animation, you could get away with a lot, obviously, because it's animation. There's no rule specifically. Mm-hmm. This, it's like, how do you make this work where you have, you know, both a CG creature and a literal 6-year-old girl, as opposed to, you know,
right,
just to, you know, have Devye Chase, who's over 10, voicing a 6-year-old girl. I appreciated that they not only found a 6-year-old girl, or, you know, what, you know, 7, 8, but I believe she's 6, like, convincingly be 6 years old, mm-hmm. but, like, make it feel like they're... The fun felt there. Is like, whatever they did as far as if it was a stuffed doll or, you know, tennis balls, whatever the hell, visual effects work they did to, like, make mm-hmm. these scenes work out well, it did register to me as there is a young actress performing with something and they're having a great time doing it, which I do think,
yes,
especially for not, you know, 35-plus-year-old people watching a movie like this, I do think makes a difference. I do think there's something there.
Listen, I definitely found myself thinking during and after, like, I recognize that this is not made for me. I'm almost 40, right?
Yeah.
And that is valid. And if kids are enjoying it, great.
Right.
I have no issue with that. And so that's definitely part of it. It's like, okay, I'm an old man now. It's fine.
Yeah. That's exactly where I landed too. Again, that's like the two minds thing.
It's obviously, like, it's not impossible to appease all groups. We've seen that.
No they have to, Aaron. What are you talking about? The House of Mouse, they have all this money. They should be targeting us directly.
Oh, Abe, you make all the points that are exactly how I feel.
We have disposable income now.
Only just now. We've never done anything before.
We've never had it before.
We can't pay.
You don't think I want a Talk Boy right now?
Oh my God, I would kill for a Talk Boy. Bring him back.
God. But I will say this, like, I was actually kind of surprised by how, like, viably put together Stitch was. I honestly kind of thought we were going to end up with, like, Sonic 1. And I was a little terrified. And then I started seeing trailers and I was like, oh, I even think I turned, like, during the AMC Silence is Golden trailer, the first time we saw it, I was like, he actually looks really good. Like, that's not bad.
Yeah.
So
when I talk about the bad CGI, I'm not talking about Stitch. He looked fine. It was more the Councilwoman and Pleakley and Jumbo and the stuff up in space. Yeah. It looked so rubbery to me. And then especially when they were in their alien form on Earth, it didn't blend well for me. That's more what I'm referring to.
Well, that's what I could agree there with the Earth mix of non-Stitch characters. I didn't mind the opening stuff because it just looked like, yeah, it's a cartoon. Like, I don't, there's no bar for me to measure this against as far as how to ground this any cleaner when it comes to a Disney adaptation of this thing. Like, it's not like Lion King where they're aiming to be photoreal. It's like, you know, it's just weird aliens. I don't know, whatever. Like, I get it, Maxwell. I'm not discounting the fact that you were less fond of it. It's just more, it didn't register as a thing that mattered to me that much. So it's like,
they
did what they did. They're okay. We can move on. I also, I do like how, I didn't forget this, but it's fun to think that this movie has this like giant sci-fi prologue thing that's separate from everything else. And then it moves on to this engaging sister story. And then it like reminds you, oh yeah, that's right. There's an alien involved in this movie. Like, oh yeah, that's what that's where this is going. There wasn't just a random short film about Stitch that happened. It's like, oh yeah, these two are going to intersect at some point.
Question for you guys. We kind of talked about it earlier, but you know, Pleakley and Jumba have much more to do in this movie. Like they kind of take on like some additional characteristics of other roles. Curious how you guys kind of, minus the Zach Galifianakis and Billy Magnuson shenanigans, or just like the actual characters themselves, like did it seem pretty natural to have this sort of takeover?
I'll just say that, again, having not seen this movie nearly as many times as I assume Maxwell and Amber have, I was like, I don't remember Jumba becoming an antagonist in this way. And sure enough, I'm like, oh, yeah, that didn't happen at all. That's the problem there. So in terms of like how this movie handles it, I'm like, I guess it needed to condense. Like, it makes weird economical choices as far as how to like not have a giant space ship chase across the city. So nonsense stuff I don't care about.
They cut out a major antagonist character. They cut out Captain Gantu. And that is basically Jumba Jukiba is now an amalgamation of Captain Gantu and Jumba Jukiba, which makes it really, really awkward because in the animated movie, Jumba becomes part of the family. Mm-hmm. Jumba is part of their little family cool in their cute little half Hawaiian, half alien spaceship house. Oh, and like, I know it's really, it's really cute. And like, it's really heartwarming. And then you lose a lot of the heart. Like originally when Pleakley came in, I was laughing because I was like, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly the vibe I wanted.
Yeah.
And I didn't really hate Billy Magnuson. I didn't like Jumba as much.
Billy Magnuson's the better of the two. I would agree with her.
For sure.
Abe, you said to like separate Zach Galifianakis from it, and I just can't because I didn't mind on paper that they made that choice, but Zach was so flat and phoning it in that any of the like, oh, he's the villainous of it, just didn't land.
Mm-hmm. Like, so I think they should have gone.
It might have worked with a different performance. It's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should have gone for three and just cast. What's his face from Parks and Rec? The one that's the major in Mission Impossible in Final Reckoning. Nick Offerman. Because he could have pulled that off. He would have been hilarious.
Yeah, but he's busy, you know, helping Angela Bassett figure out a nuclear destruction.
Like Hannah Waddingham isn't just been lying around. Like everyone's busy.
You know who I would have cast in that role and I think would have killed it is Dan Fogler.
Oh my God, he would have been so funny. Yeah. Like it just, anyways. It fell flat. And this is somebody who I know can like pull off a great role like that. Sure.
Yeah.
And because I mean, he voiced the Joker in Lego Batman movie, which is like one of my favorites. And like, come on, man, it's a great Joker. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Just like, give me a better performance. Oh yeah, I really, really do.
You're not wrong. Like I hate like saying like Zach Galifianakis, you're phoning it in, but it does feel like he's phoning it in here. It doesn't feel like he's really putting the energy in.
I was actually kind of surprised that it was Zach Galifianakis because I could tell by the voice right away, and then when he actually appears, because Zach, you know, famously or notoriously a pretty private movie star who just like loves living in North Carolina and Canada with it, where his wife is from, and you know, will pick and choose projects based off like his own schedule. So
the star we're referring to.
Two houses means two mortgage payments, though.
Good point. Yeah, everyone's got to pay for the
everyone's got bills. Yeah, everyone's got bills.
I learned that from Destiny's Child.
Yes.
I take it that you guys didn't like the dragging of the human across the crosswalk.
Oh, I thought not that was all. I thought it was funny. It was one of the few funny moments that he actually had in the movie for me. Okay. Of course, you're like, not at all.
I would agree that it was funny. Because I know it's a ridiculous alien. And it's not like they're dragging some helpless human being across a crosswalk.
When he turns and looks at the car, he goes, I'm going.
Yeah, give me a second.
There he is.
Yeah.
Oh, give me a second. It hurts.
We know you can't laugh at simple things. You are much smarter than all of us. It's fine.
He's a Tony winner. Question for you guys.
I spin it all the time.
Question for you guys on the future of live action remakes. You know, I welcome them. You know, I'm never going to turn down a movie that is, you know, of quality and they decide to put out. But I'm curious how you guys sort of feel about what you guys talked about previously, what I was not on, which was Disney's Snow White, and this kind of just like, I guess, maybe middling. So curious where you guys stand on the future of live action remakes.
Aaron mentioned earlier about Moana, and that to me is just, fucking baffling because that movie is like not even a decade old.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard just not to see it as a blatant cash grab.
Yeah.
Right. Like if a film, like I love, for example, Cinderella, because you hired a filmmaker, he had a vision and he carried it out. So like maybe Moana will be great. I'm doubtful. And I feel like they're running out of things to remake, thankfully, but you know, Disney used to, like, it's so difficult. Like, of course it's so easy to say tell original stories, but they also have to make box office money. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they can keep making them, but just take the time to hire a team that wants to do something unique. And I feel like if they're going to keep doing it, pick some of the more obscure, less successful ones like Atlantis or the Black Cauldron.
Yes.
Wow.
You know, where you could really try something cool and new. And the movie, the originals are not so beloved that there's going to be tons of people.
We don't worry about the reverence as much. I mean, that's, I think,
right.
Peach Dragon works as well as it does, I think.
Yeah, Dragon is so good because no one really cared about the original.
And which anyone so that says they do is a liar. But I'm just, period.
You're
calling my grandfather a liar?
No. I had seen the movie before and it was fine.
Right. I remember the box art. Yeah, from the original.
Yep,
I was like, that Pete Dragon looks a little bit weird.
But as far as like the notion of more remakes and whether or not I welcome them or what to do next or what, I mean, the optimistic answer is like, as I always say, like, I'm not against remakes, I'm against bad movies.
Yeah.
I guess, pragmatic side of me is like, well, I've seen 20 examples of Disney remaking their own movies. A handful of them are a B. None of them are A's. They haven't shown me that they really know how to, like, to truly nail this. I have not seen that example. So, like, if you're going to tell me, guess what? Hercules is coming. I'm not going to sit there and be like, I can ultimately be like, I hope it's for the best. Like, I'm always going to default to that. But realistically, I don't have a reason to expect it to be the best at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They've shown me over and over again that that's just not going to be the case. And if anything, I have to worry about if it's going to be one of the worst things I see, which sucks. It sucks to feel that way. But when it's, you know, it's not just like a smaller studio or even like Sony doing something. And it's like, hey, guess what? We got this cool director and a couple stars. Let's see what we can do. It's Disney, the biggest studio out there, being like, let's hire, you know, a director that's worked for us on various smaller TV projects or whatever. Let's hire on some actors that you've seen in a million things, including other Disney remakes, slap together some special effects because ILM staff was, you know, not busy working on a Marvel film, and we'll see what we get. And it's like, yeah, I've seen that over and over again, and it's not great. So it's like, what am I supposed to get out of this at this point?
And now what's frustrating, and I'm curious to see what happens, is Snow White did so poorly at the box office that there was some chatter that Disney was going to stop this, but now Lilo and Stitch is a massive smash that I think is going to gross $1 billion worldwide,
which was always going to be the case. I mean,
I don't disagree. I've felt that way for a while, but now to see what they learned from this, and it's probably going to be the wrong lessons.
Yeah, I hear you on that front. Yeah.
I don't think that they ever really needed to start making these into live action movies. There are certain fairy tales like that Disney had done animated versions of, like Cinderella, that have so many different iterations. And
there's 8,000 Snow White movies.
There's 8,000 Snow White movies. There's 8,000 Cinderella movies. There's like a handful of Beauty and the Beasts and like different things like that. And there's quite a few different, like you have variations on everything. Mm-hmm. And then of course you take and you remake the Disney version and people grow attached to like to that version. Like they're all made for, I feel like just this mainstream audience that will buy literally anything Disney gives them. Which is fine. And that's all okay, because those are the people that are also going to their theme parks that are buying their merchandise, yes, that are experiencing, they're trying to experience these things, and they're into all of, like, they're the ones seeing every single, like every single movie, buying all these tickets, doing all these things. And they really are about synergy. So they try to make these experiences big in the parks. Mm-hmm. So I can't help but wonder if that's their goal. If the more people walk into a movie theater and really enjoyed this movie and love the movie and see it over and over, are now going to want to interact with that movie in real life in one of their parks.
Oh yeah.
And that's usually the way they think. Like from working there for 10 years, I was like, that's exactly what they do.
I don't know. I will admit I am looking forward to Kelly Reichardt's Home on the Range.
Oh man, she's gonna fall.
Like, I mean, I would be looking forward to that too.
I mean, well, she won Best Cow that year with First Cow. So I mean,
she really did.
So the idea of giving her like six or seven more cows, like that, right? that gets
That'd
me a little
incredible.
That gets me a little excited.
Yeah,
I would like to know. Like,
she is cementing herself as the pinnacle of bovine filmmaking.
I would like to know who's going to be directing Chicken Little. I'm all for Bovine University.
Little Timmy?
I will. There's a whole thing we could go off on that.
Now that we all got it there.
I will say, if the Pandora's box is open, so to speak,
sure,
and we're going to just keep doing this thing, even though there's a finite number of Disney movies, let alone a definite finite number of Disney movies that people care about that they'd want to see,
mm-hmm,
remade at this point, which I'm desperately hoping doesn't extend to Pixar. I
did not even think about that Pandora's box.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I can.
It would ruin all those movies.
Yeah.
Unless it's like John Goodman wearing a physical suit as Sully.
I'd be okay with that.
If they do what B movie failed to do, which was just give me live action versions of the characters wearing costumes, like the commercial for B movie did. B movie would be 10,000 times better if it actually just was Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock wearing giant B costumes. That movie would be amazing. But what I was trying to say. If the plan is we're going to keep doing this until the well is dry, mm-hmm, I'd at least hope that we get more in league with things like Cruella or Pete's Dragon or even Cinderella, as far as we have the original as a sort of guide template, but not a one-for-one attempt. About Cruella, obviously, that's like a weird prequel thing that has nothing to do with 101 Dalmatians. Pete's Dragon.
Yeah, Cruella was good.
Pete's Dragon is like, whatever, we're doing our own thing.
Right.
And even Cinderella, it has the basis of what that is, but it's not like a shot-for-shot thing of Cinderella.
Cinderella
is like a 70-minute movie, and it's like, let's have a whole bunch of other stuff that like matters.
Yeah. As much as I didn't like the Snow White in totality, the remake, the live-action remake, mm-hmm, I did like that they gave Snow White more agency and like a more driven purpose about what she's trying to accomplish and get back
those modern updates like come with the territory at this point,
right? So,
it's nice to see though. I agree with you, it's nice to see,
but
those,
like, just going like beat for beat would be like, I think that'd be, that's where the mistake comes in, because I think that you and I have praised the second Maleficent for being like,
yes,
really
being
like
nuts.
Crazy battle. Yeah.
I really like the second Maleficent.
Yeah, the second Maleficent delivers something.
Like,
yeah.
Also, I liked Mufasa when I didn't like the Lion King.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it had good songs and did something new, and it worked better.
Right.
It's the Lin-Manuel Miranda of all of it. So,
yeah. Well, right. Yeah. My brother song. Yeah.
That song,
oh my God. I always wanted a brother.
Heck.
We sang that song for a week after, just walking around. I always wanted a brother, and like, and we'll just look at each other and say it. And it's so
and
bad.
I like the Mads Mikkelsen song in that movie. They're like
Mads.
Yes.
Still, these aren't like great films, but at least they seem like they're trying something.
Yeah, they're choices.
And if we're gonna make again Hercules or Hunchback for whatever reason, that'd be a feels like a disaster. Or I don't know, Atlantis, like you mentioned, or Treasure Planet, like
those.
Like, yeah, dude, but just like have a vision in mind, do something,
right?
Aim for something. Home on the Range, Jelly Records, Home on the Range.
I mean, just hit it. I can see the Cal really just being a winner in that one. Yeah. But yeah, Maxwell, I think you correctly identified too that, you know, the well is kind of running dry. So hopefully there's like not many more on the horizon. But then, you know, they're always going to find something. But separate but related, because Amber kind of made me think about this when she said that she had worked for, you know, some of the theme parks. Where are you guys on like the hardcore like Disney adults that will dress up in character and go to the parks and have like a 365
pass? What I will say is to a lot of people, they would probably consider us Disney adults.
Mm-hmm.
We don't currently have annual passes, but we have in the past. I don't dress up when I go to the, like, I might wear a Disney related t-shirt. I don't wear costumes, but I love the theme parks. I go a lot. You know, I grew up in Florida. I think like anything, there's a line, right? Like there's always going to be people in any fandom that cross that line.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there are people, Disney adults, quote unquote, that do cross the line. But I also think there's a lot of people who get a bad rap who just really enjoy going to the theme parks and having a good time. And in a world that is difficult at best, if you have something that brings you joy and is not hurting other people, go for it. Like you do you. Just don't cross the line. Like you hear stories, people like stalking the character.
Yeah.
Don't cross the line and have a good time. I don't care. Like people are too judgy.
Yeah.
Theme parks are fun.
I actually figured out that I still have a way into the parks right now. So if I wanted to this weekend while I was in Orlando, I do have a secret door. I literally was like, I could go to Epcot and ride Guardians and then dip out and come back. Yeah.
And that ride is pretty sick.
It is pretty sick. And that like that was my life for maybe 17, 18 years before I moved north. I could just get off of work, go bum around the park, like go ride whatever ride I wanted to, go anywhere that I wanted to, go get dinner, like at say Disney Springs and go see a movie or something. And that was just a regular day.
Yeah.
So I go, like we were talking about what I was doing this weekend at Universal. Like I go very differently. Like I go to the park for a couple hours. I maybe go do one or two things and then I leave.
Yeah.
I go somewhere else, like far away. Or I go for, I'll get like a vibe. I want a Violet Saki from the Japan Pavilion in Epcot. And I will literally leave work, go directly to Epcot Park, go in, walk straight to Japan, get the Violet Saki, walk while I drink it, and maybe do something else if I get the vibe. Like I'll go walk around the Mitsukoshi store. Yeah, like it's, there's a difference between Disney adults that doesn't live here and a Disney adult that has or does.
Yeah.
Because like, you start, I mean, obviously you live kind of on a budget because they don't pay well in any of the parks, but you also kind of get spoiled by having something to do around you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you start missing it because moving has made me very homesick at times where I just want to be in the parks and getting to do things. And sometimes I miss the burning smell on Spaceship Earth. Sometimes And I worked at the Tower of Terror when I did my college program. Sometimes I really just want those ups and downs. I want to visit the fifth dimension. Like, and I think that's the really the cool thing, like about having the opportunity to live here. It's not as urgent for me to do everything when I come to the park. So I actually really feel like I get my money's worth when I'm in the parks now. Yeah.
Before we wrap up.
Yeah.
I was looking through the list of Disney remakes and I came across something that I either entirely blocked out of my mind or just was not aware of. There's a made for TV musical film to be specific called Geppetto that arrived in 2000.
Huh?
Offhand, are any of you aware of this movie?
No, not immediately.
Is it Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
It's not that.
Okay, then no, I'm not. So no, I'm not aware of this.
So this is a fun game we can play because I want to play who stars in this movie. this is a little wild. So this is a Geppetto TV movie.
Wait,
Yeah. Was it for Disney Plus or ABC? Or
no, this is two. This is 2000. This is for ABC. This is 2000.
Okay, I think I know. I think I know. The
there's
answer.
No streaming. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Who do you think plays Geppetto?
Is it Jonathan? I don't know. Geppetto.
The Jonathan Taylor. Okay. That's a Pinocchio movie.
That's Pinocchio.
Out.
Okay. Never
this
mind.
Is a TV musical movie.
No, so, I do not know.
And is it starring? Is it starring like?
I'll give hints. Okay. So this Geppetto movie. Who stars as Geppetto? Okay, I'll give you some hints. They are a primarily sitcom known star.
Okay.
I don't even think I can't even think of a movie this person has even been in. Wow. Honestly, I don't know if they've ever been in maybe one movie, probably as themselves, if anything.
Okay.
Okay.
I think it was an ABC show. They now currently do game shows. I think that the games they've
said. Oh,
are you telling me Drew Carey?
Yeah. Drew Carey stars as Geppetto in this movie.
Now. Yeah. Okay. That was a musical?
No.
This is a musical TV movie. Yeah. I'm definitely pulling up a trailer for this after we're done with this conversation. Okay, now the Blue Fairy. Who plays the Blue Fairy? Also a sitcom star. I'll say this. Not only is a sitcom star, this is someone that is one, I believe, Emmys across multiple TV shows.
Wow.
Okay. Like,
I think one of the most... Julia Louis-Dreyfus plays it? The Blue Fairy
in
the Geppetto TV movie.
She sings in this movie?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are our main stars.
When did this come out? 2000?
2000.
I mean, turn of the millennium.
Future commentary with all four of us right here watching the Geppetto movie. I wonder, it's probably on Disney Plus. But we also have Brent Spiner as Stromboli.
Obviously.
Data?
Let's see. Usher Raymond plays Pleasure Island ringleader.
Okay.
Wayne Brady plays Lizarno the Magician.
I mean, that tracks. They're on Hulu. That tracks.
Anna Gosteyer's in this.
She's a banging singer. She was in Elphaba.
Among the
Elphaba?
She was in Elphaba on Broadway.
Wow.
Yeah.
She was. Yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And she was just on Broadway in Once Upon a Mattress with Sutton Foster.
Yes, she was. Okay.
She has a great voice.
If you watch the SNL 50 musical sketch,
mm-hmm.
she sings all throughout it.
Wow.
Okay. Like,
I'm going to go back and check that out.
Among other featured players that are just young stars that we might know be familiar with, Anton Yelchin was in here.
Oh.
I
love that guy.
Let's see. Sarah Paxton was in here. Camille Winbush, who was on the Bernie Mac show, was in here. Let's see. I see Kane Hodder as Pleasure Island inhabitant. Jason Voorhees
so
himself.
Funny.
Wild.
This was nominated for 4 Emmys: art direction, costumes, hairstyling, and makeup.
Fantastic.
It was released.
I think it's amazing that it was Drew Carey, because if it were nowadays, it would have been what's his freaking face?
James Corden.
James Corden.
Himself.
Yeah, exactly. He would do the whole thing himself.
I'll also really to wrap this up. In 2006, Geppetto was adapted into a stage musical and renamed Disney's My Son Geppetto. Disney's My Son Pinocchio.
Okay,
I
was like,
colon Geppetto
is going a layer up.
Colon Geppetto's musical tale.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Oh, now looking at the Geppetto 2000 TV movie, the reason why Anna Gasteyer is in that is because Stephen Schwartz wrote all the songs.
The songs are probably good.
We're gonna
look more into this. Yes.
Also, before we go, I have a question for you guys, because you, Maxwell, you and Amber have been to Disney World in Orlando. Is there a food that you guys would say, if you're going to go visit Disney World, you have to get this?
Ooh.
God.
Because you're talking about like the sake, and the sake sounds great, but also it's like, I wonder if there's like a snack or a food that you're just like, I that's my go-to, or like, I would never leave the park without getting it.
There is a cart in Magic Kingdom near Adventureland that'll do takes on egg rolls. And I don't know if they have it right now, but they had like a pastrami and mustard egg roll, which made my Jewish heart very happy. It was really yummy. They also do like cheeseburger egg rolls. But also there's a Sleepy Hollow stand that has really good
Belgian waffles with, you can get like fruit and different sauces on top.
Yeah, my favorite one is the Nutella and fruit one. And it's like a waffle sandwich. They fold it over and you can eat that. I am a purist. It is popcorn, 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 and Dole Whip. And I love, like, there's the Sunshine Tree Terrace. Like, they do an orange swirl that's like
orange after, Julia like, orange style.
Yeah, orange Julia style. And it's like it's soft serve, and they'll do like floats for you. Like, they'll do like a whole pineapple Dole Whip float, just like they do in like Disneyland. It's so good. But I love going to Animal Kingdom and getting that with rum, because yes.
Ooh.
Because I am nothing if not a theme park lush.
There's so much good food around Disney World. We could do a whole
podcast. We're going to have to save this for like our spin-off episode for all the Disney park foods.
Oh yeah,
and I guess Universal Foods, because you got Amber, you're at Universal right now, right?
Yes. Oh my gosh, and it was such a great day for food yesterday, because I yesterday and today, actually, good food.
This is all you can hope for in life.
truly, it's a problem, but also a blessing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess since we didn't actually do this, when should people see Lilo and Stitch? Just to get back to that real quick, Maxwell, when should people see this movie?
The original 2002 animated classic is available now on Disney Plus.
Amber, when should people see this movie?
Go see it in theaters now. I mean, if you have to wait till Disney Plus, see the animated movie, but it's worth your stubs if you have that, and if not, take your kids.
Very good.
Yeah.
Abe?
Families, I won't knock you if you're going to go see it in theaters, but I'd definitely just be like, you can just check this out on Disney Plus later.
Yeah, I don't begrudge the idea of going to see the, you know, one main family-friendly movie that's out right now, but I also don't think it's amazing. But I do think it's serviceable. I don't think it's a regrettable watch, so I would say, yeah, when you get the chance, when it's the most convenient.
But Aaron, if they go to the theater now, they can help make the movie $200 million by the time Monday's over.
Well, no, see, Abe, the problem here is, I have it third in the box office gamble, the most important aspect of this entire conversation. So I needed to hold, I need to scale back on how much money it's making. Right now we're in a good space, and we'll just let's just hold there, and it'll be fine.
Totally in the same boat.
But we'll see where things go. Just a reminder, this movie made $183 million in America alone this weekend. 341.7 globally so far. So.
Holy cow.
It's going to clear a billion in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's doing what it's doing. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Get on it.
All right. Well, with all that in mind, that's going to do it for this bonus episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. Matt Sweat, where can people find more of you online?
Follow me on Twitter at Cinemaxwell, Instagram Cinemaxwell Inc. Yeah.
Amber Coates, where can people find more of you online?
I'm on all of the socials as Takara Kanashi. I'm going to spell it for you. TAKARAKANASHI. Means sad treasure in Japanese. Anyway, so I'm on all the socials as that. And you can also find Swell and I at Ember Products, PRODUX, on the socials as well.
Very good. Everything I do can be found on my personal Substack page. Go to zeke.substack.com. Socials at Aaron's PS4, and again, be sure to check out Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla with myself and friend of the show, Terrence Johnson. Abe?
For more fun stuff on my Instagram, abe.mua, and X, Twitter, Blue Sky, Walrus Moose, hashtag, may I have a hug now, Grand Councilwoman? He's very polite about it.
This
respecting boundaries, you know?
This podcast,
she's just like, never.
Yeah, exactly.
This podcast, be found everywhere you can find podcasts. You know,
we're online.
Socials, you can find us and follow us, and feel free to leave reviews and whatnot. Maxwell, Amber, thank you both for joining us this evening.
Thank you both.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, happy to have you back here talking about Lilo and Stitch, and hopefully more in the future. Thanks to listeners for listening. That's going to do it for this episode. Next week, we are talking Karate Kid Legends.
Yeah,
that's going to do it. For this bonus episode. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
Ha ha ha!